it's not fun to say I told you so when you're talking about the well-being of our country. You know, it's frustrating that we're like, we foresee all of these things that are going to happen to these policies that you're impulsively putting in because you want to cater to somebody's emotions. And then there's going to be stuff to clean up, and we would like to avoid the cleanup. You know, let's just stop doing these, you know, for show policies to get votes. I mean, it's detrimental to everybody, not just Republicans. It's detrimental to especially Democratic cities that we're seeing right now. So I think that's what, it's just so frustrating because it's like, I want to stop saying I told you so.
Hello and welcome to The Joe Mobley Show. I'm your host, Joe Mobley, and you're listening to the only place in cyberspace where we talk about being conservative. We hit on current events, the politically correct cancel culture, and problems with civil discourse. But most importantly, we discuss what you can do to come out of the conservative closet. The Joe Mobley Show is a new and exciting podcast that airs weekly on Monday mornings. We have a range of controversial topics on deck. Even so, it's important that we hear from you what matters most. Be sure to send questions, comments, and things you'd like to hear discussed to ask@thejoemobleyshow.com. That's ask@thejoemobleyshow.com. To make sure you stay informed on the latest content, be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to great podcasts. Thank you for tuning into The Joe Mobley Show. I am, of course, Joe Mobley, your host. And today we have an interview with Katie Trent, who, honestly, I tell you guys all the time to write into the show or to tweet or passenger pigeon or whatever. That's how Katie and I met. We literally met in a random room on Clubhouse and retweeted a couple of tweets. And here we are for an interview. Katie Trent, follow her on Twitter @KTTrenta. And for you non-spelling people out there, that's Kilo Tango Trenta. Tango Romeo Echo November Tango Alpha. So really easy. Type that in the Twitter and give her a follow. Katie, how are you?
Thank you so much. I'm doing great. How are you, Joe?
I am doing great as well. Thanks so much for coming on. And I'm excited about the interview because people think, like, I say this a lot, people think that these things are scripted. They're totally organic, normal conversations. We've never spoken for more than like 5 minutes. And
Very unscripted. This is my first podcast too, so I can assure everyone there is no script at all.
I'm super excited for your first ever, hopefully not your last, podcast interview. I think Clubhouse, I think that's where we first chit-chatted. Clubhouse is definitely breaking down the public speaking fear because people are obviously on it all day and night talking.
Oh, so true. And I remember being so nervous when I first went on Clubhouse to even talk at all. And now it's just a very normal thing to do. But it has helped because I was a very nervous speaker before that, which is kind of cool. I mean, if you think about it, because that's a fear a lot of people have, I think. And what a cool way to kind of get rid of it through an app like that has been very helpful for me.
I'm just waiting for it to get like logged in the certifications. You got to put in 1,000 hours of speech on Clubhouse.
Truly, I know. I bet something's going to come up soon. Well, you can now pay people, right, to get into their room, or you can send them money on there, I think.
Yeah, I've never done that.
No, me either. I don't think anybody on there is worth paying to hear talk.
So interesting. Like, podcasts are free, YouTube videos are free. Like, no, I'm not going to pay you to listen to you pontificate. Anyways.
It is. But yeah, so thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Of course. Do you even remember, like, I feel like, was it, did we meet in one of my spicier rooms where I'm conservative, change my mind. Voted for Trump because I'm not an idiot. And what was the other one? Something about the Chauvin trial or around trial time. Maybe like, no, it was like in March. I forget what it was called. That one was pretty juicy though. People were coming out of the woodwork like, Yeah, lots of opinions on that.
Oh, yes. You get a lot of characters on there, too. It's always interesting. And I would always, you know, kind of listen and just baffled at some of the insanity, because it's almost like Twitter, but live, and these people don't get to edit or, like, you know, and they're really bad at articulating what they want to say. You can tell that Twitter is definitely a more safer space for people to be insane on. Because Clubhouse, man, some of those people, like, they go off, they get angry. So yeah, those rooms are always very interesting to listen to, for sure.
Yeah, people go off. That's the way to say it. Everyone, I don't know if you follow Conservative Anne, but man, she has some haters, some people that just go after her. People come into her rooms and just like yell into the microphone.
It's almost like they just see conservative in the title and they go in there just angry already. Like, they're already mad just walking into that room and they're going to yell about whatever it is. You know, it's just a lot of insanity, really, is what it is. But it is nice to have those rooms, though, you know, with like-minded people like you and a bunch of the other conservative, you know, younger conservatives, too, especially, to kind of chat with, because I don't get to do that often. In real life, you know, so that's really cool that app kind of opened the doors to that.
They definitely brand people with the little dunce cap, that little like new to Clubhouse thing. I call it the dunce cap because you're like scared to death already when you're new to the app, and then you get the little dunce cap to follow you around.
Like, I'm new here. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, it is. And then they had all the Android people join. So there was a ton of new people recently with all those party hats. And yeah, it is. That's so funny. And they're banning people a lot on there and everything. So it's kind of turning into a little bit of a, you know, typical social media kind of echo chamber, if you will. But luckily for now, we still have some good rooms going.
Yeah, I love Chris Ruby's rooms, and I'm always waiting for my everything to get canceled. I changed my branding on my website so many times because Google was tinkering with it, literally when I had less than 1,000 like hits on the website. But now I'm like, I don't care. The tagline, the metadata, search key term everywhere is uncloseted conservative. That's like, that's the brand, that's what it is, you know, big tech, get over it.
I know. That's, I think, the biggest issue right now that we're facing, to be honest, is this whole big tech censoring, you know? It's just so dangerous.
Well, that's one of my questions, is what do you think the biggest issues, you know, facing? And some people think it's like a right-left thing, like facing conservatives, but those of us who really kind of can discern and learn from history, I tell people this is an issue facing everyone. Just because you're on their team when whatever it is, you know, the purge, the gulag, the whatever it is, when that happens, they don't give a crap about who was on what team. They're burning it all down.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing, is how naive to think it's not going to happen to you. You know, and that's what you have to kind of look at it and say, if the roles were reversed, would I be okay with this? And I think that's what a lot of people lack when they're, you know, thinking of these issues, is that, well, it's not, and, you know, it's not hurting me, or it's good for my side, therefore I'm okay with it. But at the end of the day, you know, they're going to turn on you too eventually, and they always eat their own, you know, and when that starts to happen, what do we say? Just, I told you so. Like, at that point, it's going to be so far gone. So I just wish people could reflect and see, you know, how dangerous it is to censor, for big tech and our government to decide, you know, what information we're allowed to find, what information we're allowed to be told is true, or even to speak about or post about. And then we find out a lot of the information we weren't allowed to speak about or post about ended up being true. So how dangerous is this, you know? And I don't see it getting any better, you know, anytime soon. So it's kind of scary, the path we're going down, for sure.
The further away from Trump's presidency we go, and the more that comes out, the more I'm convinced he had a crystal ball, because he was right about like 9 out of 10 things.
See, that's what I want somebody to do. Like, make a list of all the things that Trump said that people said was, you know, a conspiracy, or that you were insane to even repeat. I want to list, and I want to see how many have come true and how many have not. And I guarantee you, majority of them have come true, which is, that's the scariest part. You know, that was a president of the United States that was being censored. And it turns out what he was saying most of the time was very accurate. So, I mean, at some point, they're going to have to face what they've, you know, done by censoring the president when he, you know, censoring truth from Americans. I think that's, I mean, anybody that can't see how dangerous that is, you know, ignorant, or, you know, choosing to just turn a blind eye to something dangerous. I don't know what else it could be.
So I'm going to pull a Jen Psaki here and circle back, because you said something a little while ago that was something to the effect of trying to get people to realize when they're done with whatever group, then they're going to come after them. Like, I get that I'm a Black dude. I can have conversations with Black people that other people can't. My wife is white, so she can't go down to the hood and in front of all the Black people be like, y'all realize that y'all are the racist ones, right? Not me. Like, or wear like a white pride shirt or anything like that. But man, I try and tell them all the time. Oh, that's what you said. You said, would it be true? Would I feel the same if the roles were reversed? And I try and tell specifically Black people, because there's this anti-racist movement or whatever the heck that means. And it's not about equality. It's really about better treatment, preferential treatment. White should have less, Black should have more. And what I tell people, all right, if they do some kind of crazy reparations, or maybe they say like 60% of the white population needs to leave the U.S. or something, who cares? If they come up with something crazy. But really, the big problem is the censorship when they're saying, and the canceling, when they're saying, you can't say this, think this, believe this, or you can't work in this state, in this country, in this region. I tell other Black people, look, man, if the role is reversed and they're saying, hey, you can't hold this belief, or you can't work, you can't provide for your family. And that's what, like, that's why I didn't want to be a political activist, but now I'm fully a political activist. Mm-hmm. And it's because, like, we're pregnant with our fourth child. Like, my ability to be able to work and pay for food and shelter and clothing for literal kids, all of them under seven, that's important. Like, that's what the game is. That's what the stakes are. So people can't just march down to my job and say that I'm a white supremacist. Thankfully I'm Black, but my in-laws, you know, can someone just go down to my father-in-law's work and just be like, hey, he's a white supremacist. Why? Because he's white. All right. You can't work in this town anymore. Like, that's insane.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I think the worst part of this is that when you start to call everybody a white supremacist, or you start to call everybody, you know, racist, or all white Republicans are racist, or, you know, so-and-so, that really muddles the meaning of the true issue. You know, there is racism. There is white supremacists. These things exist. But when you start to call everybody it, it muddles it, and nobody's really going to, you know, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf type thing, where it's like, why are we putting so much emphasis on this issue and forcing this when it's, you know, a lot of the times it's very exaggerated. And then you're taking away from the actual issues when they occur. So I think it's really detrimental, you know, all around, the kind of just wanting everybody fired, anybody who might have said something, you know, back in fifth grade or whatever it is. Like, this is just craziness to me, because, you know, then true issues come up, and what, people aren't going to believe it, or people are going to, you know, roll their eyes and say, yeah, right, you know, everything is that. And that's where I think it's really dangerous, is that you're just muddling everything. I think that's the biggest thing Democrats seem to do right now, is like overuse these buzzwords and call everybody all these names. And it's to the point where I'm starting to roll my eyes at a lot of it, because it's like, is it actually, you know, it doesn't seem like it. So it's really just, I think it's more detrimental to what, you know, they claim they're doing. They're actually hurting the cause, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I'm hearing in my mind's ear Michael Knowles. Like what you just described is, and here's a shameless plug for someone who doesn't need it, but is the title of his not upcoming, but here book, Speechless. Ding! Controlling Words, Controlling Minds. And like the power to be able to just change the meaning of words. And like big tech is so bad at this. They're literally like the day after someone is saying something absurd, the Merriam-Webster's website definition changes. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I think they even changed like what packing the court definition
they did. They changed the definition of racism to mean that it has to have a power element. So there's no such thing as a poor or a middle class racist because the power and influence element's not there. It's total bull crap. There, you can be racist and be a pauper. Okay. In fact, a lot of poor people are prejudicial against someone. You also can't be racist if you're black, which makes no sense. And I tell people, like, my grandpa was racist. He didn't like Asians. He didn't like Asians because of his time in Vietnam. It was understandable, but it was still ethically and morally wrong. And it wasn't even Vietnamese because you couldn't tell the difference. It was all Asians.
Well, and that's racism, right? So it's, how insane are we saying, like, just we're eliminating entire groups of people from being able to be called what it is racist. I mean, can we just acknowledge there's bad people of every race? There's great people of every race. There's, very intelligent, successful people of every race. There's not successful people and, stupid people of every race. I just think, it comes down to that. And it's amazing that we've picked it apart the way that we have, to the point where it just makes absolutely no sense at all.
So you're hitting on two of my favorite points. The first one is everyone who's listening needs to subscribe to the show right now. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And if you are subscribed, then rate and review, obviously. And I know that many of you haven't because hundreds of you have subscribed and only a dozen or so have rated and reviewed. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is that you're hitting on is that words have meaning, people. I think all of these words are overused and misused, but it's clear to me that hardly anyone knows what bigotry means. And bigotry is all over Clubhouse, which actually means not allowing disparate opinions, just shutting down the thoughts, beliefs, and opinions of others. So no dissent.
Oh, that is.
That's bigotry.
That's
I hate to break it to the leftists, but you guys are bigots. Your leaders, AOC, Nancy Pelosi, they're bigots. They shut down any type. The school board here in Loudoun County literally shut down the speech. We don't like what you guys are saying, so you're done. That's bigotry. Yeah.
And I think a lot of it comes from they're very aware that they are not capable of debating the insanity that they're preaching. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be countered. So if you don't know how to counter it, you cannot really follow up anything with facts or any kind of statistics, data, rational thought of any kind. If somebody asks you just, hey, can you clarify that a little bit? And you're shut down, immediately because they can't. So they'd rather shut you up, get you out of the room, and make sure nobody hears it before they're exposed for the, fake that they are, to put it nicely.
Yes, it's a PG-13 show. I've only had two guests that said a lot of bad words, and one of them I just let them all fly, and the other one I tried to do some bleeps.
I'll censor myself in that way. I don't need to be swearing on here or anything like that. That's crazy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. People would benefit from, I don't know what the answer is, like word of the day or something. Or like, I'm not saying we need to read dictionaries, but man, we can't keep recreating the meaning of word. And this isn't dog whistling, folks. This is literally in Orwell's novel, 1984. And he just missed the mark by a couple of decades, because there's a clear memory hole where there's no past, there's no future, there's just now, because for the last 18 months, one side, I don't even have to say which side, has been chanting defund the police, get rid of their vehicles, get rid of their weapons, bring in social workers, get mm-hmm. rid of their facilities. And now there's a rise in crime. And that same side is mm-hmm. saying, this is the Republicans' fault because they didn't pass those bills to fund the police.
There's days where I'm like, am I insane? Like, am I living in a completely different reality from majority of our government and society at this point? Because so they're saying, Republicans are the ones that are responsible for lack of funding to police, right? So I mean, what does every Democrat that went out and picketed with their defund the police picket signs look at their signs and think, oh wait, am I Republican now? Or like, are they confused as to, do they actually believe this, that it's actually Republicans defunding the police? And to be honest, I think Democrats can say anything and their voters believe it somehow. So I wouldn't be surprised if they now probably are on board with the fact that Republicans somehow are the ones that wanted to defund the police, which is so wild. It's insane.
Well, they've got their voting records because, not a single Republican voted for this bill. Because they're not going to vote to defund the police. And it was ostensibly defunding the police, saying to give all of a fixed sum of money to this bullcrap thing and that bullcrap thing means defunding the police. It means rerouting all of these law enforcement funds, all of these crime fighting funds under the auspice of emergency relief or whatever, and sending it to drag queen story hour to get them more books and more makeup or something, or like better cameras to record their bullcrap. That's defunding the police. Big surprise. Not a single Republican in Congress voted for that. But now they turn around and they're like, oh, you see, this was the Republicans' fault.
There's always so much pork shoved into those, bills, and they're like, I can't believe they wouldn't pass this. And it's like, well, if you actually read it, you can really, really tell exactly why nobody voted on that. And it's just so frustrating when you just see the, AOC tweets and all the fake, outrage, when they know exactly why something didn't pass when it doesn't pass. It's never just a blanket like, hey, we want to get money to the police. It's always something extra and goes to somebody that is benefiting them somehow, and it's never really genuine. And I think that's really so frustrating, is that they are so good at making it. They're really, really good at playing to people's emotions. I think that's what Democrats can do really well, is make people feel like they care. When at some point can somebody look at their actions and realize they don't care at all? They do nothing to help anybody that they say they want to help ever. And I'm just surprised. I think more and more people are kind of waking up to that. But it's frustrating to just see happen over and over and over. And I just want to say, how insane is it that we're already in the refund the police stage? It took how many months? How crazy is it? What, just like 3 months and we're already trying to refund them?
I have a theory about this, and it's actually, this is why I sometimes wish that we, like, hey, let's just get it over with it. Let's try socialism because these idiots want to try it. My theory is this. History, everything is accelerated in the United States because there's never been a country like this. There's never been a form of government like this. And so the impact of certain things are vastly accelerated. Different economic theories, the impact is vastly accelerated. So like the Scandinavian countries, they voted in socialism. It was a freaking train wreck. And mm-hmm. it took about, a decade to manifest, and then they reversed it. So now they're like a capitalist society with socialized healthcare and a couple of other things. Just like this defund the police thing, like if the police took a week off, people are like, oh, everyone would be, everyone would be upright and upstanding citizens and crime. No, it'd be a freaking war zone for a week. But the defund the police movement, trying it here, it turned to crap so fast, thousands of percent in crime rate increase. Certain crimes increased 3,000, 4,000, 5,000%. So it went to crap so fast and so magnificently that we're already there. We're at the refund the police. So I'm
it's
just
almost
like,
enjoyable, though. You know, it's kind of like, but I'm kind of sick of saying "I told you so." Like I, it's not fun to say "I told you so" when you're talking about the well-being of our country. You know, it's frustrating that we're like, we foresee all of these things that are going to happen, mm-hmm. to these policies that you're impulsively putting in because you want to cater to somebody's emotions. And then there's going to be stuff to clean up, and we would like to avoid the cleanup. You know, let's just stop doing these, you know, for show policies to get votes. I mean, it's detrimental to everybody, not just Republicans. It's detrimental to especially Democratic cities that we're seeing right now. So I think that's what it's just so frustrating, because it's like, I want to stop saying "I told you so." I want to stop, like, I'm nobody. I shouldn't know, you know, how bad policies are going to be. But even somebody with me who's not in politics at all knows when a policy is going to turn out terribly. And it does. And it's like, why do they keep doing this, you know, willingly? And it's all for votes, I guess, right?
I think it's because they act like children, and I think they act like children because they're actually swayed by the proclivities that children have. And the perfect example, because it is inflammatory, it's a little bit insulting, so I use myself as the example. When I was a kid, an adult would say, "Hey, the refrigerator's rotten or something. It's been in a house that's been, you know, vacant for a year or whatever. Don't open the fridge. It smells like death in there." What did 10, 11, 12-year-old Joe need to do? I needed to open the refrigerator and experience the awful foulness for myself. As an adult, when someone says, "That smells awful, don't open it," I don't open it. And the Democrats have to open the bag of crap and smell it for themselves. They cannot heed the warning.
That's such a good way to put it. That's so accurate. And I think it's, you know, I also feel like a lot of what they're doing right now, the Biden administration specifically, is out of just pure spite for Trump. You know, like reversing literally everything he did, let's reverse it no matter what. And it's like, there's some good stuff in there, and you're just straight up refusing to even acknowledge the good in anything, because God forbid, you know, you give any credit to Trump for anything he did. And they can't do that. So I think it's childish. It's out of spite for Trump, which, I mean, is such a insane thing to say that our country's being ran on by somebody that just wants to, I don't know, write over everything the previous president did, no matter what it is, regardless of how well it's working. It's dangerous.
Absolutely. So we are coming up on time, and I keep promising the listeners, my episodes used to be like an hour, or one of them was 2 hours, I had to cut in half. I'm trying, especially for the locals community, because there are those content limits where you got to keep it under 30 minutes.
Oh yeah.
Which is fine if we go over, but I want to get to these last two questions. So there are a ton of conservatives that are in the closet, to varying degrees. And you're one of those people I consider an out-of-the-closet conservative. You're online. You know, your name, your face, and your support of things like a love of the United States. I support the Constitution, law enforcement, or freaking the Star Spangled Banner. Who knows? You know, all of these crazy things that signify that you actually love the place that, you know, you were born, and, right. And the flag and these things. So what do you got for people that are in the conservative closet, deep in, just an encouragement for them, or any tips, or, you know, it's not as bad as they think? What's your message to those closet conservatives?
Yeah, I mean, we need you to speak up. I think that there's a way to speak up on topics and issues without anybody being able to, you know, use it against you. You can do it in a way that doesn't, you know, if anybody heard it, they'd say, well, that's okay. He just said he loved the country. He just said that he, you know, wants to follow the Constitution. You know, you can be very basic about it and very obvious with your, you know, intentions and clear, and you don't have to turn into some, you know, screaming, fighting with liberals person when you come out of the closet. We need people to start speaking up, because we're letting insanity take over right now. And it's not even to the point where it's like, there's plenty of Democrats, I'm sure, that are not okay with a lot of what's going on. So I don't know. I think it's just once you start speaking up and you realize it's not that bad and people actually feel pretty similar to you and you start to find those groups, it becomes a lot easier. And honestly, it's like a weight off your shoulders when you finally can speak your mind about some of these issues.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We need you there.
We need you.
You know, we can keep saying silent majority or whatever. And honestly, it doesn't even matter if it's a majority if you guys stay in the closet. Katie nailed it. We need you.
We need to stop pretending insanity is the new norm. That's my biggest thing. We need to stop this.
The funny thing is, those of us that are out of the closet, we've got like radar for y'all. We can kind of tell. You know, we'll be out. Someone will say something crazy. Everyone's going along with it. Oh, ha, ha, all whites are racist. Ha, ha, ha. And we see you over there in the closet kind of looking left and right. And like,
yep.
You're not like nodding. Okay. You're awkwardly like grimacing almost.
Yep.
Just come out. Come on. Who are you fooling?
Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to regret not speaking up, especially when, you know, these things are really becoming dangerous to our society and, you know, we need voices. We need sanity again.
Man, this is happening twice in one episode, but another plug for someone who doesn't even need it. Michael Knowles, I was listening to his show today and, whatever day it is, what is it? It's actually a Tuesday. These things come out on Mondays, but I was listening to his show and he was talking about this TikTok that's out there that some hard to know the gender, hard to know the sexuality. And guess what? Neither of those things matter. But, you know, someone on TikTok made this little like song about how they got vaxxed and how it was so good and how they still like double mask when they're out and they believe that the vaccine is safe and effective and it works and they're safe from COVID, but they don't want to be mistaken for a Trump supporter. So he's like, guys, the mask thing was never about safety. It was always a political signaling thing. So he's like, it's funny now out in public, the people not wearing masks are conservatives who aren't vaccinated by and large. And the people who are wearing masks are fully vaccinated Democrats who don't want to be accused of being conservative. So they're just going to wear the mask forever. And I'm like, dude. And the guy said so much. He said as much in his TikTok. He was like singing about it. He was like, I'm safe. I'm glad that the vaccine is, I'm glad that the vaccine is out there for people that want to take it. But this dude was nailing it. He's like, I'm still going to wear my mask because I don't want people to think that I'm a Republican. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, and that's been the agenda, right? Is to make sure that everybody thinks that Republicans are, you know, the bad guys. And we don't ever want to be seen with a Republican or be called one. God forbid you're ever put in that group of people. You know, we're to the point where they've succeeded in making us, you know, the enemy in our country, which is just terrifying if you really think about it. And how stupid are you to be vaccinated and you're double masking, which, you know, double mask was never really a thing. I think Fauci said it for like a day or whatever. You know, he said everything and then went back and said the other thing and then he went back and said the other thing. I think that's kind of Fauci's way. But double masking with a vaccine is just, I mean, at some point you have to look at yourself and think, yeah, I'm not quite right in the head if you're doing that. It's just wild.
I mean, could it be that they're trying to divide us in the groups? Groups have worked so well in history, the Houthis and the Tutsis and the North and the South, the monarchs and the untouchable. Like, what could go wrong if you divide the society into two polar opposite groups?
And pin them against each other and make sure everybody thinks one side is the enemy. I mean, nothing could go wrong, right?
Everything will be fine. I mean, I tried looking up scenarios in history online, but, you know, it was all 404 page not found. So.
I mean, yeah, same with like socialism that they want to try. That's always done. I mean, nobody's done it the right way, I think is really what it is, right? Is that there hasn't been true socialism, I think is usually what I hear. Or true communism, or, you know, it's never been done right in history, but if I did it, it would be the right way. You know, I love that point out too. It's like, just look at history.
There are so many holes in that boat. And one of the things that I try and bring to the listeners, practical advice, you know, you don't have to learn rote arguments, but here's a rote argument. Two things to say to any of your diehard liberal people in your life that want socialism, and we'll do the real socialism, the democratic socialism, feel the burn, Bernie socialism, whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, two problems with that. California ran all the numbers because they wanted to socialize their medicine. And you know what they found? They found that it would bankrupt their state and that the production and the aid from the federal government wouldn't be enough to keep them afloat. So there's the financial problem. But here's getting mugged by reality. There are, we call them liberal hellholes, but there are liberal havens out there. You guys know the places, the mm-hmm. places that are plus 9, plus 10, plus 11 districts, the place where... You know, the places that Trump legitimately did not win, you know, yeah. You know where I'm talking about.
Yep.
How come Democrat-controlled states where all of the local governments are Democrat-controlled and they've been controlled for decades, not a single one of them has socialized healthcare or socialized anything else? Any of them, they've got a Democrat lock. They have the what they call government trifectas, where there's a Democrat control of the judiciary, the legislature, and the executive of the state, and sometimes the majority of the counties in the state. But not a single one of those Democrat havens, I say in air quotes, you know, with their high crime and their, you know, poverty intensities, not a single one of those places has all this socialized dream world. Like, why is that? And they'll have no answer.
No, they never do. That's the thing, is there's never an answer to these questions, especially about, like, look at government ran anything, to be honest, in our country. They don't go well. You know, even the healthcare that we do have through the government isn't great. You know, it's not easy. It's not organized. A lot, you know, look at how we handle certain things, even getting like stimulus checks out, how many people that were dead got one or, you know, not in the country. Like, our government doesn't do too well at organizing and getting us things that we need in a productive manner. What makes anybody think that they'd be really great at handling everybody's health care for the entire country when we have the most obese, unhealthy population in the world? And you think it's going to go well? I mean, I can't wrap my brain around that mindset at all in any way. I mean, I do think that there needs to be some change to our, you know, healthcare, but I don't want the government being the one that runs everything, because they don't do
It'll turn the healthcare to the DMV, you know, it sounds like a great idea.
Like, yeah, that's what I ask people. Do you ever like going to the DMV? Is that ever a pleasant experience for you? Like, exactly. You don't want that. When you have to get to the doctor. I mean,
you know, I'm glad that you brought up the slow rolling government, because a lot of conservatives are not tracking on this. They haven't gotten into the Federalist or whatever. But the founders knew, and everyone needs to understand, that slow, inefficient government is good. And the mm-hmm. reason for that is fast, efficient government is overbearing and too powerful. Government, George Washington said in his farewell address, the benign influence of the good laws under a good government, of, you know, for free people under a good government, a benign influence. I'm not supposed to have a real relationship with the government that I feel the government's hand in my life on the daily basis. No, that's totalitarianism. That's common. That's China. They kick it with the government. We don't kick it with the government.
The second you feel the government's hand in your life every day, you start to need the government's hand in your life every day. You can't function without the government's hand in your life every day. And I don't know how that's comforting to anybody to think that they want to go down that path. That's terrifying to me. I want the government out of my life as much as possible, unless I decide I need them, or, you know, they are doing the job that we expect them to do with military, you know, immigration control, keeping our country safe. Other than that, I don't really want them in my life, you know, and I don't get why people want that so badly. It seems very odd to me. There's nothing comforting about
it. Exactly. And the way that our system works and the way that all government should work is good ideas over a long period of time is what's needed. So honestly, like, I don't care what AOC has to say, not because she's a progressive leftist or whatever, because she's a freshman congresswoman. You know, you don't come onto the scene and your first day on the job, you're writing economic stimulus, not for your district or your state, but for the entire nation. Freshman congresswomen don't write fiscal policy for the nation. Good ideas over a long period of time.
Exactly. I don't know where she got the idea that that's what she should be doing, you know, right off the bat. It seems kind of odd. And it's also odd that nobody stopped her. But exactly. I mean, they want these quick fixes that they're not even remotely thinking of what is going to happen 10 years down the line from this, you know, policy that we're demanding, or what comes next. Like, you give them an inch, they take a mile. You know, that's the Democrat way. You give them a little bit and all of a sudden they want you to completely change your entire life to suit what they want you to do. And I just, these quick, impulsive decisions that are extremely drastic, but then there's, you know, there's saying, I'm like, come on, Green New Deal, just change everything. Like, we gotta change your entire lifestyle.
Like, let's just outlaw cars.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do you think there's people that are going to benefit? Like, there's poor people with cars that cannot go get an electric car just because AOC says they need to. Like, that's detrimental to people that are living in rural areas, people that can't afford these things. And those are the people they're, what, fighting for usually, right? Isn't it? It's just so odd that they do these things. It's like, I just roll my eyes, but it's also like, why is there so much, there's so many people backing this stuff. It seems crazy.
I completely agree, man. I'm glad you said that. So the last question, I say it's always the same. Yeah. Honestly, sometimes I forget to ask it, but if you could snap your fingers and everyone on earth read and understood one book and like really understood it, what would you pick and why?
Oh man, that's a good question. I would say probably Jordan B. Peterson, 12 Rules for Life, I would say. I think that book really helped. I mean, it would be very helpful if people could reflect on themselves and could understand how they can make their lives better in every area and know that they have control to do that. I think if everybody actually read that and comprehended it and realized, hey, I have control over the way my life goes. I have control over the way I react to things. I have control over the way that I raise my children, the expectations I put on them. I am accountable for myself. Could you imagine? Like, if everybody realized that they could be held accountable for their actions, they were held accountable for their actions, and they knew that they could control their actions and were expected to, how nice society would be. So I would say that.
Oh, yeah. People would stop saying, I deserve blah. It's like, no, you deserve exactly what you have. It's what you worked for. It's the consequences of your actions, good or bad.
No accountability these days. And I think that's the biggest thing. Is like, if anything happens in my life, I try to stop and say, what did I do? Or what could I do differently to make sure that does not happen? It's not, why would somebody do that to me? Or, you know, I can't believe there's terrible people that want to make my life, you know, terrible. It's no, wait, hang on a second. What am I doing in my life that's causing this negative outcome, and how can I change it? And I just don't, it's such a sad mindset to think that it's like everybody else needs to fix your issues for you when you really have a lot of control over your own, much more than anybody I think realizes, especially on a certain side of politics.
Awesome. Well, Katie Trent, ladies and gentlemen, follow her on Twitter at KT, just the letters KT Trenta, T-R-E-N-T-A. I said that weird again, KT Trenta. Follow her on Twitter. Get Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Life. It's a good book. I actually haven't read it. I've listened to him lecture on it a lot.
Oh, his lectures are awesome, yeah.
I have an ever-increasing reading list. I'm biting a bullet and reading White Rage to I don't even know what I'm going to do, give a commentary or something. I passed on White Fragility. Anyway, reading White Rage right now.
Good luck.
Anyway, but to balance it out, I'm also reading a biography called, what is that called? Where is it? It's on William F. Buckley. I think it's just called Buckley. Anyway, guys, read books, have great conversations, but most of all, come out of the freaking conservative closet. Katie Trent's out of the closet. Again, follow her on Twitter at Katie Trenta. Katie, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Joe. I had such a good time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Joe Mobley Show. Remember to subscribe and make sure you don't miss out on future content. You can always show your support by leaving a review or making a financial contribution by going to thejoemobleyshow.com and hitting support the show. Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us. To him be the glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. If that was the first prayer you've ever prayed, I hope it won't be the last. Until next time, this is The Joe Mobley Show.